That's, I think, the difference between me and a lot of people is I'm not going to stop.
Right.
And I'm not going to let anyone stop me.
Yeah. Hey everyone, it's Darian Harvin, and you're listening to Am I Allowed to Like Anything? The podcast that talks to people about their work, their lives, how they're maintaining their optimism in this world, and what they're actually loving in culture right now. Now for this episode, Natalie James joins me. Natalie is a Los Angeles native who I met when I first moved to the city. She's a creative producer and writer for food, music, and travel, and she also works in the music industry as a radio host, DJ, and A&R. Natalie talks to me about growing up in Los Angeles as a Mexican American, how she started and distributed her own zine across LA at the age of 13. I mean, I feel like that was just one of the few nuggets and gems that she dropped. But if you know me, you know that I love zines. She also talks about going to therapy and why it's helped her so much. She tells me a crazy story about how she got thrown into DJing and how it's also become a blessing for her. And really, I think the running theme I value the most in this episode is how we are both focusing our energy as much as we can on living a life that kind of supersedes the internet. In my opinion, Natalie is a force, and she's a force because she knows what she believes in, and she also wants to empower others to use what they have to get shit done. I'm an advocate of that as well. I hope you enjoy, and if you do, rate and subscribe on iTunes and follow the podcast on the gram at AIATLA.
The quiet storm.
Quiet storm vibes.
Best vibes.
Natalie.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking.
You know what? I want to start off by saying that I have not met someone who is, and I mean this in a good way.
Yeah.
Who has been so professional and has been like in our age group in a long time. And like polite.
People say this a lot, especially when it comes to my emails.
Yes. And your text messages sometimes, too. I'm like, oh, I forget this is like, I need to step my cookies up.
I think professionalism is undervalued amongst a lot of people, especially in Los Angeles. Mm. And I think it's for me, it's like breathing at this point.
Right.
I've always been this way. Mm-hmm. I write thank you notes, which people are always like, Their brains are blown to pieces.
I remember you told. Where do you get your thank you notes from?
I actually had my own stationery personalized.
Okay,
I'm gonna shout them out. In 2016, Moo had named me one of their top American entrepreneurs.
Whoa!
Yeah, it's a really cute article. They featured me, and I got them pressed on their Luxe line of cardstock with my logo, which was designed by one of Beyonce's graphic designers.
Who?
I'll tell her. Her name is Sarah.
Sarah.
I'm not going to put all her info on blast,
right.
But she's incredible.
I used to intern at Parkwood.
So oh,
amazing. That's why I asked.
Well, when we're
I
on our downtown.
Though.
Okay, she's
yeah.
incredible.
Yeah.
And just she did a lot of the early work and brand concepts for Nasty Gal.
Okay.
Did a lot for Flaunt Magazine. Her like, just she did the On the Run tour with Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Very cool.
We have a mutual friend, and when... As you know, professionalism, I was like, I got to have a tight logo. Hit
right.
my best friend. I was like, who do you know? And she was like, you need to talk to Sarah.
Yeah.
And I did. And here we are.
Actually, now let's bring this first full circle because
yeah.
when I was interning, his name is McGavin Israel. He was an intern as well. He was a graphic design intern. And he went on to helping like assist on some big projects with B. And he also made this podcast art.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so he
I love that.
Yeah, so he took like that photo is literally like a little photo of me that he kind of like outlined and illustrated, and I love it.
I'm into it.
So he did some of my original podcast art as well. So anyway,
probably a professional.
So anyways, I love your professionalism.
Thank you.
I feel like for me, I'm always kind of going in between this line of like, I want to feel human, but I want to feel or relatable, but I want to be professional. But sometimes I think I should be veering more on the professional side.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Because as many people who've told me about it, mm-hmm. or even my friends who tease me, because I like email my friends like that too.
Yeah.
It's how I am.
Right.
And hey, if you want to get the job, hit people with a bit of professionalism.
Right.
Why not?
Hey, it's better safe than sorry.
Better safe than sorry.
Okay. So let's get into my first question.
Okay.
Talk to me about how you grew up.
Okay.
You're a native Californian.
I am.
So talk to me about life growing up in California.
Okay. So I love talking about where I'm from because I'm born and raised here in, I'll say, Los Angeles County. There are some people who say if you didn't grow up in LA proper, you can't claim LA.
You know what? I hate that.
They can sit down because I actually don't know anyone who knows Los Angeles better than I do.
Check yourself. Okay. They better check themselves.
I'm born and raised in the SGV. That's the San Gabriel Valley.
Got
626,
you.
Formerly 818. And I was born and raised specifically in San Gabriel. And I was the fourth generation there. My grandparents went to segregated schools for Mexicans in San Gabriel.
Wow.
My grandma went to San Gabriel High. My mom went to San Gabriel High. My sisters went to San Gabriel High. And that's where I graduated from.
Okay. How many sisters do you have?
I have two older sisters.
Okay.
And a mom and a dad. Shout out Nina and Steve. And my neighborhood growing up was split Mexican-American and Asian-American.
Okay.
And then as I got older, but majority of my community was Chinese American and Vietnamese American. And in high school, the numbers were like 60% Asian American mm-hmm. and then the rest Latino.
Okay.
And I would say there were less than 5 black students and less than 5 white students at my high school.
So you went to school majority like Asian Americans or first generation Asian Americans?
Yeah, I would say a lot of people at my school, English was a second language.
Okay.
Most people at my school were either working class to below the poverty line.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very working class immigrant community.
Yeah.
And I like coming from there because
I was going to ask you, what did you learn? Like, how did that shape you, you know?
Well, I would say anyone who comes from like a working class family, which are not many people I meet in entertainment, which is always just,
yeah, kind of mind-blowing in my
it
opinion
is. I mean, I've been working since I was 17 years old.
Same.
Yeah, because I've had no choice.
Right. What was your first job?
My first job was at 21 Choices, a wonderful frozen yogurt place in Old Town Pasadena.
Okay.
And still go there to this day. Wonderful people who own it. A great place to work. And I love that they donated all the extra yogurt to the local mission for the homeless.
Wow.
And so both my parents, the thing that I can say I love most about them, aside from instilling manners and etiquette, is they gave me a work ethic that mm-hmm. is pretty much unmatched by most people I encounter.
Mm-hmm.
My father, both my parents were union. So I'm pro-union and will forever be pro-union. My mother was a Teamster. My father was in the Boilermakers Union. And they just told me, if you want to get what you want, you have to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
For someone like me, there was no other option.
Right.
So if I seem like I work incredibly hard, it's because I do, because there's not like a trust fund for me to fall back on.
Right. Yeah. And also, you don't know any other way.
I don't. And in everything I did, you know, my parents put me in sports. I mean, I love sports. As you probably saw, I'm on a soccer team now.
Wait, you are?
I missed that.
That's okay. Awesome.
It's on my Instagram stories right now. We just won yesterday. I'm the goalkeeper. I shot everyone down. We won 3-0. Sativa FC.
Wait, oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, I know, I'm hyped. So I played soccer and softball for 15 years. My parents.
Okay, I played softball too.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What position?
I played outfield.
Okay.
Because I was really fast. I was also a runner-up batter.
Yeah.
I played on a national team.
Tight.
In a national league, and I would like travel across the East Coast and play softball. It
yeah,
was awesome.
Yeah, I played on a club team too.
Yeah.
An ASA team.
Yeah. I think, I forget.
It probably was. So it's ASA is like the club teams. I was on an ASA gold team out of Orange County. I had to drive really far. But yeah, that's my parents instilled. I can't thank them enough for, actually, when I see them later, I'm going to thank them again, because people be lazy out here.
And whoo, okay, let's get into that later. I'm going to make a little note.
Make a note. Just do the work. That's just really, do the work.
And like, do the work and have some gratitude.
You got to.
Think about how you communicate with people and be thoughtful.
Yeah. For most people's inner turmoil is spilling over constantly into their work, into their relationships, into their friendships. And they should just go to therapy and get it together.
When did you start going to therapy? You mentioned that before we started recording.
Yeah, and I'm hyped to talk about this because I'm team get every single person into therapy.
Yeah.
So I actually just graduated therapy 2 weeks ago. And wow. Yeah, I went for the past 14 months. I've never been in therapy in my entire life. I feel like also anyone who's a person of color or from a working class background, you can relate to this. It's not something that is spoken about in the home. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, hey, deal with your feelings.
Jason, we were just talking about that. We were just talking about how like depression is taboo in some communities. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's perfectly it is.
Yeah, and, yeah.
You know, I'm Mexican American and you're African American. Mm-hmm. And I would say this is something our communities have in similarity.
Right.
Especially amongst class lines. I feel like racism, sexism is really talked about a lot in this country now, which I'm very happy about by a lot of people. Some people have been talking about it forever, as they should, but people weren't listening.
Right.
But I want to hear more conversations on class.
On class.
Because class warfare is so real, especially in Los Angeles. I've experienced it time and time again. But I hit a very low point in my life in 2016. Mm-hmm. And even though, like, I wouldn't wish it upon anyone, had I not gotten to that point, I would have probably not got into therapy. And so that's what completely changed my life. And for me, it happened very radically. And I went, I went every week for 14 months. And I did the work. And I told my therapist, I was like, if you don't need to go easy on me, let's be tough.
Right.
Give me some assignments, some worksheets. She hit me with all of that. And I also just started reading books on various forms of therapy and listening to podcasts my friend would send me. And there, if people have noticed a radical change in my life in the past year, it's because therapy helped me dissolve my shortcomings.
Mm.
And those were the things that were really holding me back from the things I wanted to do.
I see.
One of them specifically working in music. Another is I was really dating terrible people up until like 14 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that has changed and I'm happy and I'm healthy. And I just am excited every second of the day.
That's amazing.
It is. So I just want to tell everybody, if you feel like you want to die, I wasn't going to kill myself, but never in my life had I felt like I wanted to die.
But it was
kind of
like, meh, if it happens, it happens.
There was a moment where I was like, if a meteor hit my house right now and I was gone, I'd be straight because the pain would be over.
Right.
And I never felt that way. And that was, it was dark.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Who or what got you into therapy and into finding the right person?
Yeah, that's easy. My best friend, Martine Sims. I have a few best friends.
Is she an artist?
Yeah, she's an international art star. Yeah.
Gotta have her on the podcast, quite frankly.
Yeah, she's the one who just left. She's leaving for Paris today.
Is she?
Yeah, she's doing like a 6-week residency. She's going to Art Basel in Switzerland. And she's going to be in Portugal for something.
That's amazing.
Yeah, she's amazing. And she, I would say, is one of the reasons, like, I can be who I am right now.
Wow.
Because we've been friends for 16 years now.
Whoa. So
she's like my oldest best friend. And she saw me, all my friends, like Martine and Aaron, that's my other best friend, Aaron Cristobal, also another genius. So I was doing bad, really bad. Like, I wasn't even doing my hair. And if people know how much I love my hair, that's a warning sign. So Martine, who's also a big advocate of therapy, was like, hey, have you thought about therapy?
Right.
And I was like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And then someone...
So you weren't even against it. You were like, I needed something. Yeah.
But I always just thought I couldn't afford it. Mm. And during this time, like, I just quit working. So I didn't have, like, I just had some money saved.
Right.
And I was like, how can I do it? Well, I found... This is where you use your resources, people. I found a sliding scale low-cost therapy in Pasadena. Shout out Pasadena Mental Health. Mm-hmm. And I only paid $20 a session.
Wow.
So...
That is so good to know.
Yeah, and they're
gonna
all
put that in the footnotes.
They're all over the city. Like right. There's some in downtown. There's like a women's mental health clinic in West LA that I looked into. They're all over Los Angeles. You just have to like do again with everything. You have to do the work.
Yeah, at least that initial work where it's like you have to get on your computer. You have to do some research, and sometimes that's the hardest step for people.
And you know what? But it's not even hard. That's laziness yet again. This is one thing that I'm really over in my life is people making excuses and being lazy.
I know. And also translating it into saying that the laziness is actually self-care when it's not. But I do think for some people, like finding a therapist or even like some people don't even know where to begin.
Right.
And so that's where I think like even sometimes that for people can be a step where it's like, okay, once they get the momentum going, then they're headed in the right direction.
But I will also say this. And again, I want to talk about class warfare. I'm mm-hmm. not talking about people who don't have like access to time because they're constantly working.
True.
Or access to the internet. Mm-hmm. But my guess, if you're listening to this podcast right now, you have access to internet on your phone, or you can go to your local library, which I'm a big advocate of, and get on the internet for free and type in low-cost therapy Los Angeles.
Yeah. That, it's a place to start.
That's mm-hmm. And if people are saying, I don't know where to start, google.com, dog, or ask your friends.
Yeah, or you just told them a great way to start.
Or just told them a great way.
Yeah. Okay, so... That was amazing. That was awesome.
Get your mind. I want everyone listening. Do you want to be better at your job? Do you want to be a better friend? Do you want to be better in your relationships? Go to therapy.
Yes. I feel like you just honestly reinforced that I need to get into therapy like tomorrow.
You do.
Because I've been going through all these things in the past week where my relationships have been changing and I'm so open to change. I'm so open to realizing more of my flaws. Like I'm not resisting to like turning the mirror on myself and being like, how can I be a better friend? How can I be a better human to other people who don't even know me, right? And I think like that is what I'm like constantly trying to figure out. And I think therapy could help me to do that.
It absolutely
can. And I can be better to myself.
Those are the only kinds of people I fucks with, by the way. People who are interested in self-actualization and how they can be better in society.
Yeah.
If you're not on that tip, I don't need you in my circle.
So, so, so true. So I want to go back to your childhood a little bit.
Okay.
What do you remember being into and liking? Like, what were some of your hobbies, even in terms of, let's maybe focus on music. Okay. Because for me, I'm trying to get to a place where I can maybe tie some of the things you're really into.
Yeah.
Now, to maybe some things that you were interested in childhood or not.
It's from the jump. Yeah, mm-hmm. I will tell you, it's everything I'm into now, I was interested in as a child. Mm-hmm. And I would say music was my first love. My oldest sister was really into new wave and some punk. Like she was, Jane's Addiction was her favorite band. She was into Bauhaus, The Smiths, The Cure. And I also loved that. There's a story I tell because I would say my first like loves in music from like age 3 to 7. Was really new wave and mm-hmm. all of that and pop like Madonna, who I know people shit on Madonna a lot, and I'm here for the discourse on where she's been problematic, but mm-hmm. I will also say as a little girl seeing Madonna express herself specifically her sexuality did a lot for my life, and I will be forever grateful for that. Same with Prince, who I was into as a very young child, and same with Bowie. Mm. Seeing those kinds of people express their sexuality made such a huge imprint on my life. Then when I got to elementary school, I got really into gangster rap around 3rd to 5th grade.
Oh my God.
And there's a story I tell in 4th grade. My parents bought me Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style, Dr. Dre's The Chronic, and Ice Cube's Lethal Injection. And I'll never forget opening them on Christmas Day. I was so hyped. I'm also like 10, and my middle sister was like, she can't listen to that. She was a snitch, and she made my parents return that to Blockbuster Music.
Wow.
Remember that guy? Anyone remember that? And that's what I listened to. And a lot of Tribe Called Quest, like, they were my favorite in fourth grade. Still love Tribe.
Mm-hmm.
R.I.P. Five Dog. And so my musical narrative throughout my life has changed. So in childhood, I had new wave, gangster rap. And then when I came around middle school is when I really got into alternative and punk.
Yeah.
So
Blink 182, what was it like, Take Off Your Shirt and Pants? It was like one of my first CDs.
Well, see, now I'm going to tell you, I'm the kind of person who shit on Blink 182.
Oh my God, stop it.
Because, see, this is where, like, I think our maybe our slight age difference.
Yeah, that's like
that's not punk to me.
Okay,
I'm talking,
I get
like
that.
Germs, Dead Kennedys.
I was not listening to that. I can't even act like I was.
Yeah.
But I did love Blink 182. And my dad did introduce me to the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which I love to this day.
Oh, okay. I love Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah. I need to go see them in concert. Like, I don't know if that's going to happen, but
I saw them at Coachella like 4 years ago. I also feel, I love that you're not from California and you like them, because I feel Red Hot Chili Peppers is that like band that you could be embarrassed to express your love about publicly.
Mm-hmm. Really? You feel like it's that way for them? Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I think they're incredible.
I do too. Yeah.
And Flea has a music school in Silver Lake for children. I love that. And yeah, Michael Key is poetry. So, and when I went to Rick Rubin, I DJed at Rick Rubin's.
Yes.
2 weeks ago. I was really tight. Mark Ronson had a party there, and me and Martine DJed back to back. And
that's amazing.
It was.
Tell me about your foray into the internet.
Okay, that's easy. It started with like sex chat rooms as a young teen. I didn't have a computer until I left for college. Like,
okay.
So that's another thing. My parents saved up and bought me a computer for my first year of college. And that's the first time I ever had a computer. But before then, I used to use a computer at my mom's friend's house on AOL dial-up. And I was a virgin, but I was on these like Yahoo sex chat groups.
Yeah.
ASL, you feel me?
Yeah, and just ASL, like the AIM groups too.
Yeah. So that was my first foray. And then my first year of college is when I really like dug deep into the internet. I got on LiveJournal.
Okay.
I was really into LiveJournal.
You shut down your LiveJournal? Is it still out there?
I wish I never deleted it. my LiveJournal was tight.
What did you talk about? Do you remember?
Yeah, of course. I talked about music and fashion.
Yeah. Can I tell you, I found this old blog that I didn't write to it very often. It was a Tumblr. I want to pull it up because it honestly had me...
You were rolling?
I was rolling. But the crazy thing is, like, the things I was talking about then, I'm still into now.
Yeah.
You know? So it was like, cool. I think it was called like highandmighty.tumblr.com or something like that. I'll see if I can pull it up. But so crazy, I remember writing about Jasmine Solano.
Okay.
Because she went to Emerson College. I went to Emerson College.
Yeah.
But she used to be like a DJ on WERS.
So your college radio?
It was our college radio, but it was also like a top Boston radio station.
Oh, amazing.
And so I remember like writing about Jasmine Solano being like, I think this girl's on the come up, like XYZ. And now I know her.
She lives in Los Angeles.
She lives
now,
in
right?
Los Angeles, yeah. And we like met through some mutual friends, but I also used to like go to her sets when she was in New York. But I had totally forgotten that I had written about her.
Oh.
And I was looking through this archive of my blog and I was like, wow. You know, I just sometimes it was just kind of like nice to reinforce the things that I was really into. No one was telling me it was cool.
Right.
No one was saying, you know, the internet, Instagram post, no one was telling me they were cool. I was just into what she was doing. Right. And so it was just like a good reinforcement for me.
When the internet was more fun.
Right. The internet was more fun.
Yeah. I also want to shout out this online group I was part of called Pink Noises. What's so funny is I've been thinking about when I was 18 and mm-hmm. the things I wanted to do.
Mm.
And at this time, I wanted to produce music and DJ.
Yeah.
And so I joined this online group called Pink Noises. And it was a website dedicated to women in DJing, electronic music, and production. It's archived now. I recommend everyone look it up. But I wrote a Riot Girl zine.
Wow.
Yeah, I love. People have just discovered zines, but I wrote my first one when I was 13 years old.
That's amazing.
I sold them in 3 different stores, online distro, and I'm in the National Zine Library as well. In addition to some few academic books, my zine was called Pink DNA.
Pink DNA.
Yeah. And I wrote about racism, classism, sexism, music.
How did you get your zine distributed? At the age you just remember asking people or like figuring it out?
I walked into Tower Records and I was like, hey, you want to carry my zine? And they would review it and they're like, all right, we'll buy it. Same thing. There used to be this zine store in Silver Lake called Zinorama. I just need to know I've always been a hustler. Like,
yeah,
this was me at 13 years old.
Right.
So
hustling in the arts. Hustling for the culture.
Like, actually, though. So my mom worked at a school. So my production costs were zero because I used the photocopy at her school to make all my zines.
That's amazing.
And then I would sell them at school for $2. And then I would sell them to Tower Records and Zinorama for like $1, and they would charge $2.
Uh-huh.
And then there were at this time these zine distros on the internet, in addition to like Maximum Rock and Roll, which is was the like ultimate like zine guide. I don't know if anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I did, and I just went up to people and like, hey, you want to buy this?
Yeah.
So
that's shoot. I need to start doing that.
Why not? Honestly. The worst someone can say is no.
No.
So just keep asking, keep pushing. That's, I think, the difference between me and a lot of people is I'm not going to stop.
Right.
And I'm not going to let anyone stop me.
Yeah. Where did you go to college, by the way? And what did you go for?
So I graduated from UCLA
with
with my degree in women's studies.
Oh, you did tell me that.
Okay. Yeah. I really need to check my credits to see if I have enough to actually tell people I got a Chicano Studies minor,
mm-hmm.
because I did a lot of work in Chicano Studies, and mm-hmm. I was a member of Mecha. Shout out all my raza out here.
Wait, what's Mecha? I don't know what that is.
It's a radical Chicano group.
Okay.
Yeah, look it up. A lot of people have problems with it. But, you know, a lot of people have problems with any group who are trying to uplift their community.
Yeah.
I first went to a school, a private school in New York, which I can't even believe now.
What's it called?
Hofstra.
Oh, yeah. Hofstra.
I went for journalism. I don't come from private school money. I'm sorry, Mom and Dad, that I did that to you. But I just had this idea that, like, New York was a hotbed for intellectualism and that I need to get away from Los Angeles. So I went to New York.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, I didn't like the school.
Yeah.
But I went for journalism and women's studies.
Okay.
And wow, people really don't have a grasp on the ethics of journalism in 2018.
It's definitely a little sloppy. It's really a lot sloppy. That's why you really have to find the people who are doing the work that you really enjoy and feel like holds up. To me, it's less about the platform these days. It's about the platform in respect to, are they publishing things that you feel like are against fact or against what you believe to be true based off of your experiences? But it's a whole other thing. So, like, I think platforms are good in that respect. Like, I know the ones that I like and the ones that I don't care for. But, like, following writers and following reporters and their careers, because they're typically jumping around all the time, I always think is the key. And finding people who are contextualizing the world, right? That's what I always say.
My new tip is stop reading articles and just start reading books.
Okay, well, I'm trying to actually get my parents into stop watching cable TV and start reading. Like,
turn off the television.
Turn off cable news.
Go to your library. Los Angeles has I worked for LAPL for 6 years.
Oh, you told me that too.
Yeah, Los Angeles Public Library, central location downtown. So there's about, 72 just in LAPL. Then there's the county libraries. There's no reason you can't be going to your local library and checking out books and films. Please, everyone, renew your library card or go get your library card. I see what you're talking about on the internet and you don't make sense. Please read books.
Wait, who are you saying that to?
Everyone. Everyone. I'm going to tell you, too, the people I respect the most are not on the internet. My best friends who are actually making moves, they're not on the internet.
Or, like, they don't have as many followers as you think. It's like the whole follower game is really off.
And you know what? Since I stopped caring about that, and I'm not producing work for social media sake anymore. Right. I'm producing work that fulfills me and excites me and that will live in other places for a long time.
Yes, I am on the exact same page as you. I think that it is very hard, or it can be a process to break yourself out of thinking that everything that you do is for social media, is for the internet, is content for those places, because like that's just the way I think we've been like programmed to think. But you really have to take yourself out of it, I think, and think more about like legacy to me is really important, and thinking more about how like these platforms are, I am not here to serve that platform, in my opinion.
Speak on it.
You know what I mean? It's like, I want to learn how to create work that's shareable.
Yeah.
I want to create work that leads to growth on the internet for like monetary purposes and also to create community. Mm-hmm. But in order to do that, I think it has to be founded in something that ends up expanding beyond your Instagram account.
Please.
So
I would also just like to say I identified social media in my therapy as something that makes me feel bad.
Yeah.
And so now that my focus and my work has shifted, I'm off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not on the internet as much, and I feel great about that. And I would also say social media and the internet is a real addiction. I mean, this is not just a theory of mine. There's actual, you know, data to support this thought I'm mm-hmm. sharing. So I know if someone who is as smart and strong-willed as I am can fall into addiction of my phone or being online, what is the average person facing? So get off the internet, get off your phone, and just watch.
Just pick up a new, just pick up something new. Pick
just
something.
Do some work.
Yeah. Or pick up a camera. You know what I did recently is I bought a film camera.
Nice.
I've really gotten into photography. I've always called myself like an iPhone photographer, like just learning how to use what you can to make something cool or to capture something cool. But I ended up coming across a film camera at a garage sale. It was like this black man's who film camera. He used to shoot race cars with it.
Oh, tight.
So it had a great lens. Bought it for $50. Nice. And Emily, do you know Emily Berkey?
I do.
Emily Berkey, she's a fantastic photographer. She shoots in film, and she's a writer, and she was the one who really sat down with me and was like, this is how this works. You know, at least as like an initial lesson. So,
yeah, that's tight.
Yeah, so it like doing things like that. I think one of the things that is so cool about my life right now is that I've been able to pick up these things that I've really wanted to do for a long time. Like even learning how to, even being in a space where it's like, I have an opportunity to learn more about DJing.
Yeah.
And to go to actually be in a mindset where I'm going someplace alone. I don't know anyone because I want to learn about something that I want to do one day. Right. Or I just want to learn more about is like really a space I haven't been in a long time. And so I'm like happy about that.
Well, being smart is cool.
Being smart is
having
cool.
Having skills is cool.
Having skills should be a thing.
Let me also just advocate for junior college classes, because I studied photography when I first went to university,
mm-hmm.
but I learned how to develop my film, so which right. is a whole different, you know, right. ball of wax. But I had been paid for all this food photography, and I was like, wait, how can I be better? So I just signed up for a photography class at Pasadena City College to strengthen my skills. A few years ago, I wanted to develop my French skills. So I took a French summer school course at LACC.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, so
I want to be smart.
Right, I want to be smart too. I want to learn. I want to keep on learning. Yeah. I want to be a student. I am a student of life.
You are.
That is what I am. So I know we just shit on the internet, but I really want to talk about how you started your blog and
sure.
the kind of opportunities that you have been able to harness because you've had this platform where you've been able to write about them and to create a following, I feel. Talk about how you decided to start it.
So when I was at UCLA, I started a blog called Fashion Intel, where at times I would write about the intersectionality of fashion and feminism. Which I you know, was a bit dense for the internet in the mid-aughts, but I kept on. Mm-hmm. But every now and again, I would write about where I ate or where I traveled. A lot of time it was Palm Springs. I'm always in the desert. Mm-hmm. And people responded very well to that. So during my Saturn return, I broke up with my boyfriend of almost 9 years. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to start a whole new website. I'm going to call it NJ in LA, and I'm going to focus on food and travel stories. At this time, I was the LA food writer for Refinery 29.
Okay.
And so I just started it. And then came the advent of Instagram, I think in late 2012. And then in 2013, Instagram had made me a featured user when they used to do those things. Mm-hmm. And my following went up 37,000 in 2 weeks.
Wild.
Yeah, it was wild. You get this. Anyone who's been chosen as a featured user, you get sent a DM and an email, and they're like, we've chosen you out of millions because we love your voice and your photography. They send you a special book.
What is in the book?
It's like Instagram photos.
Cool.
Yeah, it's only featured users would get this book, and it was really cool. And in that time, yeah, my following surged. So because of that, I got signed to two different agencies that would give me like photo jobs. This mm-hmm. was pre-algorithm. Yeah. So I'm going to say I was really making bank in 2013, 2014 mm-hmm. because I had so much engagement on my posts. Now the algorithm has changed that, but I'm thankful because social media does not nourish me. Mm-hmm. And because I have so much more to offer, it's pushed me to actually pursue bigger creative endeavors.
Yes.
So I'm glad that I'm very glad the algorithm happened because it stopped my source of income. I was getting paid $12.50 per Instagram post. Those people who have hella followers, if you're not getting, I have realized there are a lot of I'd never call myself an influencer. Please don't ever call me that. But for the sake of this conversation,
right.
There are a lot of influencers out here. If you have more than 50,000 followers and strong engagement, you need to be getting paid a significant amount of money.
Right.
If you have over 250,000 or 300,000 followers, you need to be getting paid thousands of dollars.
Right.
I'm telling you this is important. I've met a lot of women, particularly women of color, who brands are using them. This is capitalism.
Right.
Okay. And so I'm sharing this because, again, this is class warfare, as undervaluing people for their work when they are actually giving your brand clout. It's not vice versa. I need people to know that. They're not doing you a favor. You're doing them a favor. So get your coins. Get a manager. If you can't get a manager, get a fake manager.
An email account with an alias.
Exactly.
His name's Roger.
There you go. People will talk to your manager differently. So
I want to talk more about how you started to... What was the learning process for DJing for you?
Okay, this is hilarious. So NTS threw their first year birthday party last November. I'm part of the original squad on NTS. I've now been
in LA. Yeah.
They've been in London for 7 years now, mm-hmm. but they came to LA about 21 months ago.
Man, I love NTS so much.
Thank you. Me too.
I love NTS. They are like, they carry me through the week, honestly. I really listen to them consistently.
You hear so much music you've never heard before.
So much.
Every show is different. Mm-hmm. And I have a rap-focused show with guests, as you know. Mm-hmm. But you also know my personality. So they asked me, hey, would you like to host and DJ, you know, the one-year party? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Some time had passed, and I saw a lineup, and I just assumed that I wasn't DJing. I hung out with Femi, that's the owner. He has become a good friend of mine. Amazing man. It's a Black-owned radio station, too, if you didn't know.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, Femi's so tight, incredible man, really gives opportunities to people of color, women, and is really just about it. He was like, are you ready to DJ tomorrow? And I was like, wait, what? And he was like, yeah. I was like, Femi, I didn't know I was DJing. And he's like, well, I have faith you can do it. And I was like, all right. I'd never DJed in my life. On my show, I was just using my iTunes.
Yeah.
And this would be on the CDJs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So the next day.
Whoa. Okay. So wait. So let's just get this straight. You have never DJed before.
Ever. And I was about to DJ on the CDJs.
What are they called? CDJs, right?
Yeah, CDJs by Pioneer.
And that is like a skill. To me, I mean, the biggest part of DJing is knowing your music, right? Mm-hmm. Which you already knew.
I got that covered.
But the actual skill of like that's something to me you really have to learn of like transitioning songs until you get it.
Wildly enough, plenty of DJs in Los Angeles have not learned any of those skills. I could list at least 25 off top right now who've been DJing for years And yet they still can't mix or transition or actually have good taste in the song. You guys, in 2018, we're in what month? I don't want to hear Stir Fry twice at a function. Get it together. I digress.
I don't have anything to say.
So
I feel like you just burned me. I don't even DJ.
So I got to thank three people in particular. I'm trying to, yes. The first person, his name is Julian. He runs a record label input output. I may have just fucked that up, but shout out Julian. We didn't even have the CDJs, but I went over to his house and we pretended like my hands were on a CDJ, and he told me where certain things would be. This was like a 15-minute lesson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we went over it, and then that night I went to the party and I got a shout out Alima, who also has a show on NTS. She's a great videographer. Beautiful young black woman in Los Angeles. She throws a night at the Virgil, and she was there and she's like, hey. And I was like, Alima, girl, I don't know how to DJ. And she was like, well, I learned in 10 minutes my first time, so let me show you. She came over, she went over the knobs with me, fading. Damn. I like the effects. So she gave me a quick tutorial in literally like 12 minutes. And then I was on, and she's like, I'll hang back for the first two songs, see how you do if you have any questions. And she did, and she's like, girl, you got this. Since then, I want to shout out my DJ mentor, Adam Cooper. He goes by Foreigner. He started the Rail Up Party with Kalman Duran and Samantha Blake. And Adam has been such a positive force in my life. He's also my teammate on mm-hmm. my soccer team. Mm-hmm. And he's allowed me to come over to his house and practice. He's given me tips.
Yeah.
And I'm also excited to announce that I was just asked and I accepted to DJ the Made in LA Biennial wow. after party for the Hammer.
Amazing.
Yeah. And Adam's, he'll be DJing as well. He's producing the event.
So
yeah.
How did your night go DJing the party for NTS?
Oh, it was great. People, like, so many people came up to me and they're like, yo, your music selection. Because fire. I played black metal. I dated someone who was into black metal. I listened to so much black metal that I started liking black metal. So I played black metal. I played punk. I played hella rap. Like, someone came up to me and they're like, you played Space Ghost Perp? I was like, yeah, he's one of my favorites ever. One of the best producers.
Yeah.
And, yeah, people were hype. And people, I told, like, this was my first time DJing. And they're like, are you kidding me? And I also hosted it, so I was on the mic, you know, right. talking to people.
Which is a whole other thing you have to do, too.
It is. So it's like, you got the controllers, you got the mic, but really, I think one of the reasons I'm so happy now is I like being challenged. I need I need that cerebral stimulation, and working these things does that for me.
Yes.
So, and just from there, it's kind of wild. I booked that Adidas, like, pop-up after party over on Fairfax. That was wild. I just told you 2 weeks ago, Martine and I DJed Mark Ronson's party at Rick Rubin's. It's really crazy.
Yeah.
I would like to tell any women who are listening, I understand that it can feel very intimidating, and I had been afraid for so long. I mean, if I was 18 making beats on Fruity Loops, mm-hmm. but I quit and I gave that up and I gave all these things up for what? Like patriarchy, misogyny, etc. Mm-hmm. There are people you can turn to. There's Intercessions in Los Angeles. Yes. I told you about that.
Yeah, and that was the first workshop I had went to.
Yeah, and I was supposed to be there, but then I told you my tire situation.
It's crazy. That's okay.
But Intercession is a great resource for women, people of color, and queer folk in Los Angeles. They have workshops every so often. And I just say, just start doing it. If you have good taste in music, that's the first place. If right. you don't,
in knowledge,
I can't help you with that. But just having a knowledge of music is important.
Yes.
So, YouTube, again, use your resources. There's YouTube videos that will teach you these things as well.
Yeah. And we'll also teach you about the artists that whose music that you like. You should dig in and learn more about them.
Dig.
So tell me some DJs who you love who are LA based. Come on, Natalie. No, there has to be a few.
No, there are. There's just so... Okay.
The scene's a little shaky. I get it.
No, there's some really amazing ones. I want to shout out Adam. He goes by Foreigner.
Okay.
Asthma is incredible. I'm actually trying to... Well, she goes by Asmara. I'm currently talking to her about doing a video of her production for Output, because I just started doing these videos. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. Who else do I love? Nafi, they're from Mexico City, but I always, Mexican Jihad, I really enjoy. Venus X, she's not from LA.
Yeah, no, but just general Venus X shout out. Absolutely. I'm trying to have her on my, really, wait.
No, I didn't say anything. And I've seen her DJ so many times. Incredible DJ skills. She's so talented. Total Freedom. Absolutely love Total Freedom. He shits on so many people. He's incredible. I'm going to tell you, I've just in the past few months, I've started to step out a little bit.
Step out.
You will.
With the heel on.
You're not going to catch me at Lock and Key, let me tell you. Okay. I've been to Tenet's a couple times, even though I vowed to never go there.
Why so? All of a sudden, I mean.
Why did I vow not to go there?
Yeah, but I've heard a lot of different things where it's mixed emotions and reactions to Tenet's. And what is it about it?
Well, my facts. And people were like, this happened years ago, Natalie. But at least 7 different people were drugged at that bar. And the bar had a very terrible response to this. They were like, oh, well, it's, you know, it's out of our hands. It's your responsibility. I don't fuck with a place like that.
So that's what it was. Because I'd heard about the roofying.
Yeah.
And I actually had a friend, and she was like, she didn't say it in an offhanded way, but she was like, you could get roofied anywhere these days.
It's true. But there was documentation.
Yeah. And also their reaction was trash,
It was trash. And I think I want to shout out Farley Elliott, the editor of Eater LA. He wrote the piece on it. And it just put a bad taste in my mouth. But there's someone who's been DJing there recently who I think is really cute. And I wanted to go support. I've mm-hmm. been there, and I had a good time.
Okay. You also go to, I mean, I feel like you've always been this way, though, as I noticed you go to a lot of concerts.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who goes to more concerts than I do. I'm trying to think if I was 11 or 12. That's when I started going to live shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I live for live shows. I live for live music. That's why I'm trying to get an A&R job now.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, you'd be so good at that.
I think so, too. Thank you for that, you know, that cosign. I already interviewed at WMG. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I want A&R at a major label.
Yeah. Okay.
I choose not to support certain people. R. Kelly is one of them.
Right.
Because if you're a living, breathing human being and you've read those depositions that like Village Voice published maybe like 5 years ago, if your stomach did not turn when you read that, I don't know what's wrong with you. Or when like, who was it? Was it like Pigeons in Plain? No, Pitchfork published like that 135 page testimony from that girl.
Right. And I believe it's the Chicago Tribune. I'm blanking on the
publish the
yeah, but all there of these, but there's a music reporter out there who has been covering this for years, and he recently wrote like 2 to 3 big pieces for BuzzFeed News on R. Kelly.
Like the information has been there, okay, guys, but because the victims were young Black women and girls, teenagers, or children, literally, the children,
yes,
it didn't get the coverage, right? So when I see Spotify doing this, I just shake my head because it's not sincere.
You think it just comes from trying to be on the right side?
It's capitalism. It's trendy. It's trendy to be a fake feminist. It's trendy to be pro insert the oppressed person here.
Right.
But this is, you want to actually help people, why don't you pay your artists what they're deserved? Maybe that. That would be a good jumping off point. But I do want to get back to censoring things. How about offer an option to mute an artist or to omit an artist? I don't even use streaming platforms, I'm going to tell you. I'm not for streaming.
I see what you're saying. So
censorship is problematic to me because as soon as you tell, like, have any people read history books on what happens with censorship?
Or, like, do you know anything about what's going on in China? Like, literally now, right now.
But I will also say what you think is happening through China has been given to you through an American lens.
True.
Because
not denying that either.
My best friend has gone to China like 3 times in the past year. And she was like, girl, I don't believe anything America's telling us about any other country. because I'm Mexican American, and I know the lies that this country's been telling about my culture and where my family's from since the dawn of time, and still are. How many people have you asked, isn't it dangerous? Dog, have you been to Mexico? Like, I would rather be living there had the opportunities not be for me here. So I just take it. Have you seen photos of various countries in Africa, how incredible they look? Have you seen photos of any other place in the world?
But I think I was talking more about like how they censor information there, and how they censor news, and how they censor people who are LGBT, like, you know, just thinking about that. But I understand what you're saying in terms of, so, but here's my follow-up question for you.
Okay.
In terms of like the kind of censorship that Spotify is doing.
Right.
So to me, when I hear them saying, essentially what their press release translated to me was, we are asking the people who curate our playlists to no longer put these artists on those playlists.
Great. But also, you singled out two Black men in tens of thousands of known abusers from all ethnicities and races. So what are you really telling me?
It's complicated, for sure.
I don't think it's complicated. I don't trust them. And I don't think but it's lip service.
I will say, though, that I am okay going to sleep at night knowing that R. Kelly potentially has less streams because and he's making less money than he probably already was from Spotify because he's no longer on their playlists, which are highly competitive.
Well,
or is it not even worth it?
I can't relate to that. He needs to be in jail,
right,
for his crimes.
Right.
And Spotify removing two artists from their platform, it does absolutely nothing for me.
Well, they didn't remove them from their platform. Just from their playlist. Yeah.
Well, again, okay, that does absolutely nothing for me. It does absolutely nothing for anybody else. And I think it's dumb. And their politics don't actually align with that. Have you, anyone watched that Atlanta episode where Paperboy goes into those music offices?
Yes.
That's Spotify.
Same thing.
I was only Latino working on a Latino project at Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
They since have hired some more. But it's, I can't play along.
Right.
I refuse to play along with this narrative. It's all capitalism, okay? And I've been a part of that cog. And I'm not going to pretend something isn't what it is.
Right.
And that's what this is. They don't care about actually which artists have hurt people. It's just to show. It's like Starbucks saying they were going to close for that one day.
Right. Yeah. Like they just want to make sure that it seems like they're on the right side of history.
Yeah. It's for PR. It's all for PR. People, you guys, you know, everyone has PR, right? This is, if you want to get talked about, go get yourself a PR person.
So you don't stream. You don't use streaming. You buy on iTunes?
No. Right?
Okay.
I still use SoulSeek.
I don't even fucking know what SoulSeek is. Most people don't. I can't even pretend like I do.
Shout out all my music heads out here still downloading SoulSeek. Catch me in the black metal chat room. I stream sometimes.
Okay.
I mean, Spotify gave me a free year membership when I was working there. So like if I need to check something out, I'll go there. But what I do is I am constantly downloading. Well, damn, I'm not trying to have the feds roll up on me. But I use SoulSeek for my music. And a lot of people send me music.
Mm-hmm.
And I also use these sites that rip from YouTube to MP3s. Mm-hmm. I use that for music. I'm constantly, like every day, just downloading music. I like to own everything. Okay? So I have it all. I'm the only person I know who uses Google Play. But I don't use them for playlists or anything. I store all of my music there.
So, okay. So it's not about, so you're just not pro like giving your money to streaming platforms or like,
no, what, also they
is
don't,
it habit or is
I'm
it habit?
Tell you, streaming yeah. platforms don't have a lot of music I want to listen to.
Okay. Yeah. I'm really just trying to figure, I just like am interested in how your brain is working.
I'm trying to listen to rare cuts. I'm trying to have B-sides. I'm trying to hear that Automatic Man. They don't have that on there. And that's one of the reasons also. When they put playlists together, I'm not shopping at a mall. I love to shop at the mall, but I'm not shopping in a mall. I'm not interested in these playlists they put together.
Yeah.
I'm an album listener.
Mm-hmm.
I like to know front and back of an artist that I like.
Mm-hmm.
I like to really continually listen to it, to know all the songs. I'm not a singles person. I feel like anyone who truly loves music is not relying on streaming platforms to
give them what they need.
Yeah. Also, just as someone who's friends with so many people in music, they are getting paid, but pennies.
Yeah, I'm so confused. Nipsey
Hussle really did a great breakdown on Twitter. The tweet has since been deleted. Tidal gives their artists the most money. I think then it was Apple, then it was Spotify. And that's just, you know, that's not a sustainable lifestyle for musicians. That's why you see some who never stop touring.
Right.
Because that's...
that is where they're making their money.
But catch me buying tickets, tour merch, rare LPs, cassette tapes, support which way I can. If you really want to support an artist, go to Bandcamp.
Very true.
You look at the breakdown on Bandcamp, how much money they receive. Shout out Bandcamp. I would actually like to work on some projects with Bandcamp.
So. I like that you put that energy out there. Okay, let's wrap this up a little bit.
Okay.
So just tell me, what's your dream right now? What are you thinking about right now? What do you wake up and you're like, oh, I want to do more of that, or oh, I want to do that?
Well, I want to direct music videos. I've already written so many different...
You've written so many treatments.
I have. At Spotify, I think I conceptualized 25 different videos. At Output, I just wrote the interview and did my first interview with a producer and a rapper. I'm doing artist relations for more videos. But... I watch these videos out here, and I see people's response, and I'm like, wow, you've never watched a music video, right?
I've always had this thing where there are some songs that I think that I can make better music videos for. I don't really know if that's true, or just the conceptual, like...
You don't know until you try it.
Yeah. Like, I was just YouTubing how to create a treatment, like how to write a treatment, and I think I'm just going to start to do them, literally because I want... to do it. Like, I want it to become a thing I'm really good at.
You should.
Yeah.
You know who has a good treatment? Look up the Turn Down for What treatment. Okay. The whole thing is available online. That's one of the best music videos made in the past few years.
Yeah.
So that's online. The thing is, so many people do not share their information or their assets.
It's so... I get it, but I don't.
I'll share.
Me too.
You know why?
Anything.
There's no shortage in this brain.
Right, exactly.
Okay?
And you can't, I can't replace you, and they can't replace you.
Yeah. And people who act that way are insecure.
I'd rather support. I'd rather sway towards support than like feeling like I need to hold something in. What am I holding in? And the end, is it even worth it? Is it worth the result of like a funky relationship now? Like, it's weird to me.
Yeah.
Anyways.
But.
Continue.
That's something I definitely want to do. Tomorrow I'm about to direct my first video starring me with my video guy.
Amazing.
I was invited to go eat dinner and have a drink tasting on stage at the Hollywood Bowl. And it's really time for me. I'm ready to do video. Mm-hmm. I started doing them with my show. You know, I did one for O3 Greedo. I'm wrapping one up with JPEG Mafia, who was just my last guest. And now I want to do video of me like out here eating, traveling, music, etc. So that's really what I want to do, one of the things. And just producing high-quality video. I want to speak more. I want to do creative direction. I had interviewed at this company earlier this year. Didn't take on anyone. But they do creative direction for Rihanna, Kanye West, St. Mm-hmm. Vincent. And I don't think people realize that the artists aren't doing that. They hire these agencies who come up with a whole stage production.
Right.
Who come up with a whole identity for a rollout. And I know I'd be great at that.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's something else.
Okay, cool.
But I'm currently focused on the video, and I'm currently focused on landing an A&R job.
Cool. I like those two focuses.
Thanks.
All righty. So let's get into the plus one segment.
Okay.
You know, I told you this is a time. I mean, I feel like you've been so great because you've literally been shouting out people, resources, music, ideas throughout this entire podcast. But
knowledge is sexy.
It is. And positivity is too.
I agree. I've had to reel back a little bit on my positivity and more of a realist now. But I think having a good attitude already puts you a few steps of most other people.
Right. So do you have some time to think about your plus one?
Yeah, I did. But they ended up being like three.
Okay. Oh, perfect. I love it. I love it.
So, and you know, it's going to be my friends, because I actually don't know who I'm impressed by are the people, the people in my life. And there's three of them in particular. And I want to shout out my new friend first, who's also my soccer mate. Her name is Amanda, Mandy. Her ad is ideal black female. And she's a Harvard grad. And the moment I met her, I was like, oh my God, finally I've met another genius out here. I say that about my other friends, but it's so nice when you meet somebody else who just gets it.
Right. You don't have to over-explain yourself.
Yeah. And she's just as empathetic as she is a critical thinker. And she's out here really, really moving the needle on some critical discourse on her, just simply on her feet alone. She's been a moderator in some art discussions. She's been producing art herself. And I know she's out here. She's another person who I know. You entered the Spotify podcast thing.
Yeah.
I did. So did she. I hope we all make it. Yeah. I hope at least one of us makes it. But she's someone I'm really excited to seeing what she does next.
What's her Instagram?
Ideal black female.
Oh, I need to follow
her. She's amazing.
Right now.
Then I want to shout out Erin Cristobal. One of my best friends, Long Beach native. She is a co-curator at the Hammer Museum. She's she's an assistant curator, and she's co-curating Made in LA, the biennial. Mm-hmm. And when that list was announced, I think that was the first time I've ever seen that many Latino surnames on a list. There's so many brown, black, all ages on that biennial list of artists. And she is doing great work out here for our community. She understands Los Angeles. She's someone, because there's a lot of discussions about white and black in this country, and I'm here for that discussion. But I'm Mexican-American, and I had a president call my people rapists and murderers, and I saw a lot of crickets in these streets. And as I continually see my community erased from Los Angeles, when there's someone like Erin who steps up to the plate and acknowledges our greatness, our genius, and contributions to the city and art, it means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. So that is someone who I think everyone should be watching. She started a program called Black Radical Imagination. It's a film curatorial program that is just elevating the voices of young black filmmakers. She since has passed it on to two really inspiring individuals. She's amazing. And then lastly, my other best friend, Martine Sims, who anyone who followed me saw that Martine recently screened her first feature film here in L.A. At a gallery. I had a little cameo in it, but the film first premiered at MoMA. Martine is making really cutting-edge art. She's a critical thinker. And honestly, in 2018, what I care about most is that someone's brain is fully functioning. They're self-actualizing, and they're trying to create something beautiful and smart to share with others. And if you're not doing that, get out of my way.
You know, I think that's like a great way to end this podcast. That's like a final hammer down on the desk. A gavel?
I would have been a great judge.
Yes, I believe that. You know, I had a plus one, but sometimes my guests come and like really outdo me. And then it honestly makes me feel some type of way. It makes me feel a little insecure.
Oh, no. Hit me with your.
That's not your fault. That's my fault.
Yeah. You know, you could talk to your therapist about that.
I could talk to my therapist about it. Okay.
Can I? I did make a quick little. One of the things you told me just to share, and I'll just share this real quick about any new music I was listening to. Superboy out of Chicago, who I saw live. He's really great. He has a following, but he hasn't blown up to that proportion yet. Love him. He has a Weezer cover that I love. Also a big fan of JPEG Mafians, Veteran Project. And I'm still in horror stan out here. Some of the best live performers there are.
Oh, I know who I want to shout out. Okay. City Girls.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of City Girls?
No, hit me with it.
City Girls is two black female rappers from the city of Miami.
Okay.
They just came out with what I believe is their first album. They've come out with some singles and probably some mixtapes in the past, but I'm kind of like a new listener to them, but I really like their music. It's definitely all like, I'll take your man, I have a lot of money, I have the best pussy on the planet. Like, every song is definitely, but they're resilient and they're coming with it in the production of, their album's called Period.
Okay, I'm
into
that.
And I just really like their music. I like what they have to say.
Are they signed to a label?
They're signed to Quality Control.
Oh, interesting.
And so I just think that they're putting out good music. I think that the skill is there for me. I like what they're doing, and I hope that I start to. I actually don't think I'll probably start to hear the radio on the internet because it's pretty vulgar. But
You don't hear anything on the radio but J. Cole, Drake,
and Kendrick Lamar.
Right. I saw Kendrick over the weekend. And
How was that?
I mean, Kendrick is always great.
Right.
He's a great performer. Yeah, SZA really.
Was she good?
She was, and let me tell you, I had a chance to see her backstage. And, you know, I know how women stand for SZA, and I like that. But when I saw her backstage, she really does have a radiance to her and a glow and a high vibration. And so I say, everyone, give all your money to SZA. And Kendrick, that's professionalism. Mm-hmm. Kendrick Lamar is professionalism. And that's impressive to me. That's a very attractive trait. And yeah, I was really impressed. It was at the Forum. I've never been backstage at the Forum. I saw Prince at the Forum about like maybe like 8 years ago. And what an a Los Angeles institution. So, but radio sucks.
Natalie.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Hey, my pleasure.
This was so great. The spectrum of the things that we covered.
I know, we didn't even talk about food, travel, or Arcosani.
We didn't even talk about Arcosani.
Yeah. Arcosani is an urban laboratory just an hour away from Phoenix, Arizona. It's a beautiful place. Unfortunately, I recently learned that the man who built it, Solari, he's an Italian architect, his daughter came out and said that he raped her.
When did this come out?
When she came out, I think, just late last year. So I do want to mention that. But Arcosani is a beautiful place. I stayed in the Sky Suite, which is incredible. You saw the photos on the site. And that's only $100 a night. And you can stay there for like $30 a night.
Mm-hmm.
And they have it's just a really cool place. I love brutalist design. Architecture is one of my passions. And I love being in the desert surrounded by silence.
Yes.
I love
silence.
That's
what I loved about Palm Springs, I told you the first time I went. That now I understand why. I mean, I'd never been before.
Wait till you go to Joshua Tree.
Ooh.
I'll give you my Joshua Tree Rex.
Okay, cool.
So start taking those road trips, girl. I saw your tweet.
I know. Oh, yeah, you saw my tweet. Well, yeah. I that's because I was looking at, I can't even pronounce it, Arcosani?
Arcosanti.
Arcosanti.
Yeah.
That's because I was looking at Arcosanti, and I was like, 6 hours? Honestly, I'd do that alone.
Yeah, it's a great drive, too.
Yeah.
I love the desert. There's just a higher vibration out there.
Higher vibration.
Go to New Mexico, go to Taos, go to Albuquerque, go to Santa Fe. The desert is incredible. And one last thing too, when you go to those places, please try to go to, they say Indian, we say Native American on the West Coast, but I thought I was woke to a lot of things. We don't know shit about what's happening to Native Americans in this country. I learned that on a sponsored trip to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Our country is still trying to destroy them and wipe them off the face of this planet. So when you're in the Southwest, please make an effort to learn about that. Anyone who's listening, it's a big deal. Also look into Polynesian politics, something I learned about while in Tahiti. Polynesian Panthers out of New Zealand. There are a lot of indigenous people struggling in this country who are, the United States is actively trying to smudge out, and that's a narrative that's not being discussed.
Yes. And there's a lot to learn, and there's a lot to experience, and there's a lot to come to terms with in figuring out how we're going to help.
Go to the library and check out some books. If you need a reading list, tweet me. you know.
Yeah, why don't tell the people your Twitter and your Instagram.
Okay. I'm the same everywhere. Hit me on the Pinterest too. I'm at NJNLA, N as in Natalie, J as in James, I-N-L-A. Ooh, we got a clap. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Am I Allowed to Like Anything? I'm Darian Harvin, and you can keep in touch with me on Instagram at Darian, just my first name. And if you love this episode, don't forget to rate and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. This episode is produced by Jason Crowe.